everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our topic today is, was Syria and Syria's President Assad responsible for recent alleged sarin gas or then after that chlorine gas attacks on a hospital? We've been led to believe by the White Helmets, the only source originally on this information, that children were killed, people suffered, and immediately, within hours, the United States said that, yes, Syria was responsible, and President Trump said that they must be punished. And yet, there was no concrete proof. And the people behind the allegations, the White Helmets, have been shown repeatedly to be a terrorist organization. Now, you could think, how could they be terrorist organizations and be promoted on Democracy Now, win an Academy Award for Best Short Documentary, and be given hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayers' money, allegedly, to help those who are wounded or caught in the battlefield? We are fully aware of all the different terrorist groups that the United States supports. Unfortunately, the mainstream media has chosen not to touch this third rail of truth. On the one hand, we say we're against terrorism, ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, and other groups, and their actions, and indeed we should be. But then we go ahead and support them, as we supported the Mujahideen in the 1980s in Afghanistan, and as we've also supported terrorist groups in Bosnia and other countries throughout the world. And we've been supporting Saudi Arabia, which in itself is supported and paid for and trained and armed more terrorist groups than any other group in the world. And also we are part of NATO with Turkey, and Turkey's Erdogan has been helping terrorists from around the world enter into Iraq and Syria for a number of years, and then when they're injured, go back into Turkey and receive help. So on the one hand, we have a very convoluted and hypocritical position. We are against terror unless we are supporting those terrorists. On this side, we have seen that each claim that Assad has been responsible for using sarin gas on his own citizens, each one has been debunked and shown not to be true. But the neocons in Washington control virtually all the media, have had their talking head experts going from different foundations and think tanks on both liberal and conservative radio and television and in print, banging the drums that we need to deal with Assad. We, on the other hand, have looked for journalists on the ground who have been in the battlefield and tell us the truth of what they have observed firsthand. That is where we stand in this moment. So what we're going to do now, and for this entire show, something that we almost never have done, is we're going to take two interviews, part one and part two, that was done by podcaster Jimmy Dore. I like Jimmy. I think that he is remarkably accurate on the points that he covers. We have certainly different styles. And I thought about, why don't we invite Carla Ortiz, the person he is interviewing, this Brazilian filmmaker, documentarian, and journalist, on. But Jimmy did it first. He did a good job on it. So we're going to play you 40 minutes of one clip and then a second clip representing the entirety of the show because it's her message. Now, mind you, you have not heard her in the alternative media. You haven't seen her words in print, and certainly not in the mainstream media. But she deserves to have a forum. She is speaking from honesty. She was in the battlefield. She was even doing reporting in the territory where the terrorists were. She put her life at risk. And she didn't have any armed guard with her. But she was there, along with a British journalist, one of the most respected, the most award-winning British journalist. And the British journalist recently said, I was there, I spoke with the doctor, I spoke with the children, I spoke with the people. There was no sarin gas, there was no chlorine gas. There were bombs in the area. And then the dust that was built up because of those bombs and people trying to take shelter in tunnels and any place that they could get out of harm's way, they were suffocating. And they came in, and the people in the hospital helped them. Just last week, some of these people, including the doctor and the child that was in the White Helmets film and his father, were in The Hague in the Netherlands testifying that there was no gas attack, and therefore the assaults against Syria and Assad were all fabricated. Well, clearly, if we can find this out, if Carla Ortiz can find it out, and other journalists that we've had on this program can find it out, they can find it out that the White Helmets are a terrorist group that we've been supporting. They can find out that there were no gas attacks on three separate occasions where administration officials says there were. Then what does it say about our National Security Agency, the CIA, Homeland Security, the National Security Advisors, and all the other top people who are supposed to be in a position to have all the latest information and access to information and sources immediately? They've all been wrong. Why? That cannot be unintentional. You cannot have that much malfeasance. It's not possible. I'll leave it for you to decide what to make of these people. Now let's go to Jimmy Dore interviewing Carla Ortiz in a two-part series to tell you the truth once and for all about what's going on in Syria and why the media has not covered any of the post-bombing, because to do so, they would have to acknowledge they were wrong about the White Helmets, they were wrong about Assad, they were wrong on all their previous conditions. They simply have not touched the story. We will. Now to Jimmy Dore.
So, you know, I've said many times on this show that the mainstream news media does not tell us the truth about foreign policy or our wars. In fact, I did a report where everything the mainstream news media is telling you about Syria is a lie. And people are often blown away. In fact, they don't believe me when I tell them that our own government funded ISIS and Al-Qaeda to fight in Syria against Assad. So, again, it's like everything you think you know about Syria isn't true. So you've actually been there. You've reported on it. What do you think are the biggest misconceptions that Americans have about the Syrian war? And what do you think they need to know?
Well, they have this big misconception, first and foremost, that the U.S. didn't do anything in Syria, that the big problem in Syria is the U.S. didn't intervene. When in Syria, the opposition that was U.S.-backed and Western-backed is probably one of the best-funded, best-armed oppositions in the history of any opposition group ever. The U.S. was giving something like $1 billion, up to $1 billion a year, to like a bunch of different rebel groups in Syria that were basically ultimately all working alongside or, in fact, a part of Al-Qaeda. And so we are essentially the U.S. This is, I mean, the most shocking aspect of what we did in Syria is that the U.S. was essentially helping the group that was responsible for doing 9/11. I mean, it's kind of shocking to even say that. It sounds like some sort of joke, like a bad joke. But that's what happened. And then the next level with Syria is beyond that. It's like the level of Syria is probably the first issue where I just never seen the level of propaganda that we saw when it came to the Syrian war. It was to such an extreme degree. And the reason I know that is because not only because I was there, but also I have family in Syria. And I used to be one of these people who kind of believed in the other side when it came to Syria, the idea that there was this sort of like, you know, legitimate, like armed uprising that was just trying to fight the government, you know, like some like romantic uprising. But the thing is, I have family in Syria. And when your family's involved and your family like is surrounded by Al-Qaeda, it quickly becomes clear what's actually happening on the ground. I would say that's probably the biggest issue with Syria, though, is that Americans have no idea that their government helped create what is now the biggest Al-Qaeda affiliate in the history of Al-Qaeda in Idlib in Syria. And as a result, I mean, this is something that's going to have consequences for decades to come. And, you know, when there's an attack down the line and it comes from this particular group, Americans are going to have no idea the role that their government played. And it's a lot like what America did in Afghanistan in the 1980s, which was fund jihadist groups to fight the Soviets. And then not long after that, these jihadist groups that America funded, the Mujahideen, transformed into Al Qaeda, and then you have 9/11. So we
didn't learn our lesson, is what you're saying, because we used to refer to Osama bin Laden as a freedom fighter. When he was fighting against the Russians, we called him a freedom fighter, and then he certainly quickly turned his guns on us. So we're doing the same thing where we're fighting ISIS, or we claim to be fighting them in other, like in Libya or in Iraq. Yet here we are propping up the most extreme factions in Syria. Can you tell me why that is? Why does the United States want to overthrow Assad, and why were they willing to get in bed with terrorists we're fighting in other parts of the world to do it?
This is kind of historically what the U.S. has done. The U.S. has used Islamists, historically speaking, has used Islamists against its adversaries in the Middle East for a long time. And so Syria was just kind of another chapter in that ongoing pattern. The U.S. has this sort of like love-hate relationship with Islamists in the Middle East. When it suits like American needs, the U.S. is fine to stand by them and call them freedom fighters. And then when it suits America's interest to bomb Islamists, the U.S. is fine to say, oh, they're all terrorists. And what's actually funny, I mean, when you look at the Middle East, who's America's best friend in the region other than Israel? It's Saudi Arabia, the most extremist government in probably the history of the world. In modern day, at least. I mean, it's like some medieval place where people are, stoned to death for sorcery. But that's beside the point. The U.S. and Syria, the reason that the U.S. wanted to overthrow Assad, and I just want to I feel like I always have to qualify my comments with this, but it's whenever you're in the situation where you're talking about what the U.S. is doing in the region, everybody automatically points to you and calls you a dictator lover if you're against U.S. Intervention in the region. And I just want to point out, not a fan of the Syrian government, not a fan of really any government in the region. But this is just about, what the U.S. has done, and it's making the situation worse. And the reason the U.S. wanted to overthrow the Syrian government is because the Syrian government is a part of what they call the Axis of Resistance in the Middle East. That's what people call it. And that is basically countries and groups like Syria, Iran, Hezbollah, that basically refuse to bow down to American interests and Israeli interests and Saudi interests in the region. And that's not allowed. Doesn't matter if they're good or bad players. It's just the fact that if you don't do what America wants, America will get rid of you. That's kind of how it works in the region. And so that's why Assad had to go, is because the Syrian government was a part of that resistance axis. And the thing that's amazing is it didn't work. It was a massive failure. The U.S. totally lost. And now they're completely confused and don't really know what they're doing in the region. And they've actually only made their adversaries stronger.
So is there anything to Robert Kennedy Jr. reported that there was a pipeline that they wanted to send through Syria to bring natural gas to Europe? And that's why Putin is so staunch of a supporter of the Assad regime, because because he wants to sell the natural gas to Europe, and now he doesn't need that competition. So that's one big reason why he's supporting them. Is there any, do people talk about that pipeline? How much of a factor is that pipeline? I mean, there's lots of factors into this war, but that's certainly one of them, no?
I wouldn't say it's not a factor. It's not really something I know much about, but I mean, when it comes to natural resources in the region, it's something that's always involved and always a factor. That said, I actually think one of the reasons that Russia got involved in Syria had more to do with the fact that they watched what happened in Libya unfold, and it was such a massive disaster, and that came after Iraq. And for Russia, the jihadist threat is closer to home than it is for the U.S.,
right?
Just like it's closer to home for Europe. If you destroy Middle Eastern countries and overrun them with jihadists, it has a massive, the consequences on Europe, as we've seen, have been massive. They've had this massive influx of refugees. And also, Russia's not that far away either. Russia also is surrounded by countries like Chechnya and other countries that are sort of like these hotbeds for jihadist fighters. So Russia is actually more interested, I think, and this is not, again, to say the Russian government's great. It's just, I think the Russian government is more interested in stability in the region, whereas the U.S. is more interested in a system of chaos. And so Syria was just kind of a matter of the Russian government, A, standing by its ally because they saw what happened in Libya and they didn't want to see that happen again, and B, also making sure ISIS didn't take over Syria, because the Russian government didn't really get involved in Syria until 2015 when ISIS really threatened Damascus. And had they not gotten involved, this is just the reality of the situation, had Russia not gotten involved, you would have seen black flags flying over the capital in Syria.
Right. So recently, Trump made a decision to stop funding I don't know if they've done it, but he's publicly said they've decided to stop funding the opposition in Syria, whether you want to call it ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda. He said that they stopped funding them, and now it seems like this quote-unquote civil war or the fight against the terrorists or the insurgents, it seems to be almost over now, right? I'm about 90% over after the United States decided to stop funding them and stop pushing for an overthrow of Assad. Now it seems like there's peace, and there's a chance for peace, correct?
Yeah, there's definitely a chance now for reconciliation, which is there's been a bunch. I mean, it's something you haven't really heard about, that there's been reconciliation agreements across towns in Syria for a few years now, kind of slowly building and snowballing. And now it's becoming like a bigger issue. And now, yes, you are able to see more stability. People's lives are returning to like a somewhat normal lives where they can at least try to start rebuilding. And that's only because not just the U.S., but all of the players that were funding the opposition in Syria have stopped funding and arming the al-Qaeda-linked opposition in Syria. And that is why you see such a dramatic change in the trajectory of the war, which is now winding down. And you don't even really see it in the news as much anymore. It's kind of like a non-issue now.
Right.
No one's talking about Syria anymore. All that regime change money is dried up. And so, yeah, I mean, that kind of shows you that, I mean, any sort of opposition group that's that dependent on outside financing and outside funding and arms, isn't really genuine or authentic or, you know, really popular among the people. But either way, I mean, it's pretty much died down and it's over. And now what you're seeing happening is you're seeing a lot of the rhetoric that was aimed at Syria now being aimed more at Iran. And you're seeing the U.S. sort of like, especially under Trump, which is fascinating because Trump was talking so much during the campaign about moving away from you know, radical Islam. And now he's like befriended Saudi Arabia, probably more than any other administration ever. And you see this sort of weird alliance form between the U.S., Saudi Arabia, and Israel very openly. And they want a war with Iran somehow. They just don't know how to do it, because it's what's hilarious about Syria. And it's just really ironic is that the U.S. has done a lot of what's done in the region to try and weaken Iran and the groups that Iran supports, and it's done the exact opposite. Iran is much, much stronger in the region, and it's been actually a force of stability in the region. And so that's going to be like the future conflict in the Middle East down the line, is this attempt to try and weaken Iran in different ways. But I'm really not sure what other tools the U.S. has at this point.
Right, so now I want to show you a video. Here is you when you went to Aleppo. Now tell people when you went to Aleppo and what we're going to see.
I was in Aleppo in several locations, including the time of the Battle of Aleppo in December 2016. It was my third time, but my first time on during the actual conflict zones, because I was there before in the rebel-held area, but without when there wasn't real the actual battle happening. When I was in December, I testified the actual liberation of Aleppo, that we in the West made such a scandal saying that Aleppo was falling and Aleppo was burning, and that we had to respond, and that Obama had to bomb Aleppo, that he had to take action. I was right there without Wi-Fi connection, and all these activists that said that they were on the east side of Aleppo, it is not true, because there was no internet, and they were saying that they were dying and they were, you know, getting burned. I saw the actual corridors that the Syrian army were forming with their bodies in order for people and civilians to leave. I have documented all this. I've done some live videos about it. And as people were leaving, I was dumb enough at the time, with my innocence, I wanted to interview the famous white helmets, the people that were saving them. First of all, in Aleppo, nobody knew them, because they were saying like, no, who are they? We don't know who they are. When I start showing them pictures, they'll say, oh, they're terrorists, Daesh. They work with al-Nusra. And they'll say, yes, they are the civil defense, but of the armed groups. And they said like, they're together, they work together. So then it's when I met also other journalists that have been doing already investigations about it. And I corroborated this information, and I was going, oh my God, why didn't I ask more questions? Because I was, okay, I have to do more information. But I was asking permission to go, but the battle was ongoing, and it was not clear yet of also, you know, different weapons. I found also places where that being liberated, where I found also weapons that us, the United States, provided the groups like Al-Nusra, which is the affiliate of Al-Qaeda in Syria. Not only that, but later when I went back two more times in March, and then I went back again in June of 2017, I asked specifically to walk all the Suhoor neighborhood, where is the main base of the White Helmets, that is where they film the short film, the one the Oscars in 2016, which I could not believe. I was just on TV saying that it's not true, and then you're seeing all these white helmets when they told me like they did not exist. So anyhow, I went to the headquarters, and I mean,
you went to the White Helmet headquarters in Syria.
Yes, I went to Aleppo. This is in Aleppo, in the Suhoor neighborhood, in the White Helmets headquarters.
So let's show that.
Hi everybody, I am Carla Ortiz. I am here in the city of Aleppo. We are in the headquarters of the White Helmets. We see here the main logo of the White Helmets. Over here, we see the teaching of how the White Helmets have to kill. And right above...
Now, what was that? The teaching of how the White Helmets have to kill?
Help. So, yeah, basically they put posters of, you know, this is how they help and this is how they recruit people. Because, you know, they put it in the neighborhoods if you want to help and be in the civil defense. You know, if you're in the Syrian army, you get paid $50 a month to fight terrorism. And if you are a regular citizen, you get to do 16 to 18 hours of work and have two different works and you make $50. If you work with the White Helmets or Al-Nusra, you get $1,500 a month. So for Syrians, this is a lot. So a lot of people go as volunteers. And a lot of people... And I know this because people are going to ask me because I interview 9, 8 ex-White Helmets in this trip. I have the interviews, so I'm talking from what they are saying and what they would be paid. A lot of them would basically volunteer thinking they're going to help people, and they would tell me, I didn't know I had to be an actor. I didn't know, like, a lot of things were setups, and then when we would ask questions, we would not get our payment. So you have to also understand that, like, with these posters that they recruit people and they show in this wall, in the same wall, there is the logo of ISIS. This is going downstairs because obviously this is a school. It's a school, I think it's a middle school that was taken as a headquarters for the White Helmets. So when you go, everything is, a lot of places are completely burned because it's like they left and they burned everything, so they won't left any evidence. But in this one room, there were two flags of Al-Nusra. So why, if you're a White Helmet, that you denominate yourself as a nonprofit or as volunteers, that you are neutral and you're unarmed, all of a sudden, why would you have Al-Nusra flags in downstairs where you are operating?
Okay, very good point.
The flag of Al-Nusra. And here is another flag. And here we have a jacket of the White Helmets. A lot of the neighbors over here have said...
So if this is the White Helmets headquarters, and there's Al-Nusra, Al-Qaeda flags everywhere.
Exactly. ISIS. Now, I'm going to ask this. Because they put this in my Twitter and they asked me the question, but wouldn't this be before? Okay, fine. But if I am... a firefighter, okay? If I am volunteer for something, and me being Syrian, because I've been in Syria for 2 years, and if I am Syrian, and I've seen what ISIS and Al-Qaeda have done to my people, they rape my woman. They kill my children. They kill and beheaded my brothers. Would I be okay to keep a logo of my volunteer place where I'm saving people? Will I be okay looking at this logo that have brought only blood and killing and death to my country? Even worse, in this time, Al-Nusra was the most powerful armed group in Syria, especially in Aleppo. They control basically all the other 47 armed groups. So why would I be okay having flags of them? And why would I burn this place that has all the flags as well? You know, it just doesn't make any sense. This is no conspiracy theory. I was right there. I saw it. And the reason why I lift also the flag and I don't touch it is because you see that the flag was right there before. And right here is exactly, as I was walking the neighborhood, this is exactly what the civilians were telling me. They were saying that, yes, they are the Syrian civil defense, but of the militants, of armed groups only.
The White Helmets.
The White Helmets do save people, okay? They do save people, but they save the militants. They would not treat regular civilians. They treat only the armed groups.
The terrorists. So yes. Al-Nusra, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, that's who they're treating. That's who white helmets are taking care
of. Exactly.
Not the citizens.
There's where our money is going.
Yeah.
Because our press, in our briefings in the press, we have said since the government of Obama and also in Britain, they have agreed and they have basically said, admitted that we have donated millions. I think up to now it's close to almost like $200 million just to the white helmets alone.
Really?
So our taxes are being used for them to treat terrorists.
Wow. Okay. So I'll show a little bit more of this.
That they were not taking care of civilians, but only militants that carry weapons and fighters. Take your own conclusions. Al-Qaeda headquarters here, and just like not even 2 meters away, it is the White Helmets headquarters.
So you're saying that the White Helmets headquarters was just a few meters away from Al-Qaeda's headquarters?
Yes. So the next door school, it's a school, I think that one was for already like high school.
Right.
That was taken by Al-Nusra. So this is the headquarters of Al-Nusra. So if I am a firefighter and I'm a civil defense, why would I be okay? And how can I commune okay with the strongest and most evil force of terrorism in Aleppo? So it was right in front. It's only separated by a wall. One patio from the other patio. This is crazy. When I was there, I could not believe my eyes. You know, how is it that we fell for this?
Okay, because it's you have a very well-controlled media. That's how we fall for it, because we're inundated with propaganda and no one's telling the truth. And the people who do tell the truth, they try to discredit, smear, just like they're doing to Robert Fisk now. And they try to intimidate you like they're trying to intimidate you, right? So that's how people fall for it. Let's watch a little more.
This is cool over here that it says ISIS, Islamic State, for Iraq, for Al-Sham, Palestine, Syria, Jordan. You see, everything is walking distance. These are the moderate rebels we in the West have been sponsoring.
So we're arming Al-Nusra. We're arming Al-Nusra,
right?
Because for a long time, they rebranded themselves from Al-Qaeda,
right?
And they called themselves Al-Nusra. So they were moderate at the beginning, and we were arming them and we were aiming them because they were okay. So we're selling weapons to them, and then we're sending aid to the white helmets, and they're one door to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And we have no idea where our taxes are going.
Okay.
Cool. This is the dress code of a woman. Where it says you cannot use anything transparent, you have to be fully covered, that you should not show off, you cannot wear perfume. This is the entrance. You see that is a red crescent. It's like the Red Cross. So this was the original Red Crescent. We're gonna do a little briefing. I show you the headquarters of the White Helmets. I show you the headquarters of Al-Nusra. This is over here. You can see here what it says.
The most important part over here, so you don't have to go like through the end, is that this building, the Red Crescent, which is the equivalent to the Red Cross in the Middle East, because the crescent represents the Islam,
okay.
Was protected by NATO, by the United Nations. They are saying that this is a place where it was a no-fly zone. It was demanded that anything that we will do against this one building that is exactly in front of the Al-Nusra headquarters, walking distance, and you see flags of Al-Nusra, stickers that Al-Nusra used over there. I mean, how is it that you being the United States and having the intelligence that we have did not know that the Red Crescent was taken also and that Al-Nusra had access to this place? So how is it that the Red Crescent, and again, I'm not saying that the Red Crescent works with Al-Nusra or with any terrorist group. I'm saying that these three buildings were taken. And we are saying that there was attack. Russia is bombing schools and hospitals. Who were in the schools? Who were in the hospitals? And this is the thing that residents in Aleppo were saying. They're saying, our children have been deprived of school for 4 years because the terrorists came. They closed and shut down all the schools. Our children cannot go anymore to study. And guess what? There's where the terrorists are. Besides this, there is the other, the big eye headquarter hospital of 16 buildings. It's in the center of Aleppo. These 16 buildings is the largest hospital in all of the Middle East, eye hospital in the whole Middle East. This was the main battle point for ISIS and al-Nusra because they had fought to keep this. It's in the center of Aleppo. That was the base of al-Nusra.
The hospital.
So, and the people, and also probably going to upload this video in the next couple days, where actually this one guy who was an ex-Al-Nusra fighter tells me that they used to put people on cages, civilians on cages, and put them on the roof of the hospital so that when the Syrian army or Russian planes would cross by, they would not bomb the place and they would not kill the civilians. So
I've seen videos of people being carted around in back of trucks and cages. And that's what you're talking about?
Exactly. Because the terrorists walk with the civilians in cages if you are a minority, especially if you are a Christian or you are an Alawite. Why? Because first of all, these terrorists are not even Syrians. And this is the first misunderstanding that most people do not know. These terrorists are mercenaries from all other countries, but Syrians. So the first victims over here of terrorism are the Syrians themselves.
Correct. So now you have some videos of when they were opening human corridors.
Yes.
So do you want to talk about what we're going to see?
Yeah, sure. When I was in Aleppo, actually, and, you know, because the media, I was in so many of the mainstream media important interviews. They asked me where were my proof that I was right there during the liberation or the corridors. A lot of this footage is my own. I was right there. And I said, I'll show you the humanitarian corridors. And when the whole Ghouta problem started happening, I started getting calls again from all mainstream media for me to talk about and what I thought about Ghouta. And I was saying, I think in Ghouta is happening the same as in Aleppo. I'm not in Ghouta, but this is what happened in Aleppo.
So this is what happened in Aleppo. They opened up human corridors so human beings could leave without getting killed. Here we go.
Humanitarian corridors were opened. Civilians exiting through safe passages.
We are going to Jebel Bedroom because it's the place where they are liberating people and they're letting them pass and free from the east side of Aleppo to the west side of Aleppo.
This is Ghouta today.
These are the cages.
This was Ghouta before the war.
Can you stop for a second? Jimmy, how is it? I don't want that for Syria.
I know. I don't understand.
You know, look at that.
So
why do we want to see Syrian rebels, you
and
know?
And so people think that the people who lived in this city decided to bomb themselves. That's what people in America think, that they were so upset at Assad, they started bombing everybody. That's not what happened. What happened was the CIA went and paid all these terrorists to try to overthrow Assad, and they started a war. The CIA did that. And that's how this war started. It wasn't because... am I wrong about that?
No, absolutely not. And by the way, you know, because everybody's been asking me about, you know, Syrians and everything, that if we would know that they look like us, if we would know that they are white people, well, guess what? Syrians are actually very white. You've seen the child. Mm-hmm. They are blonde, most of them. And that's what a lot of the neighboring countries hate as well. You've seen, if you're a minority, which means that you are an Alawite or you're a Christian, you get on the cage. They put your Christian children in a bag, a trash bag, and they put, do not touch Christian here. I've seen it with my eyes. And
we're funding those people.
We are sponsoring them. And if Assad will leave also Syria, I don't care about Assad.
Right.
But this is exactly what's happening. If he leaves, we are going to testify the biggest genocide of Christians in the Middle East.
Yes, people don't realize that was what will happen. So just like what would happen in Libya, now there's open slave trading markets, and they've killed thousands and thousands of people. Well, let's watch a little more. Can we watch a little more of this?
Yes, of course.
So this is Duma before.
Before.
So what happened to Aleppo after its liberation?
Give me 1 second there. After the Battle of Aleppo, and Aleppo is burning and Aleppo is falling, nobody has ever in the mainstream media covered again what happened to Aleppo afterwards. So let me tell you what happened in Aleppo. Close to 800,000 people returned to Aleppo from all neighboring countries and from inside of Syria. Christians were able to finally put a Christmas tree after 4 years and go to church. And this is what happened. People were on the streets raising the flag, women taking their hijabs off that were forced to be covered. And here are some of the footage.
How many 800,000 refugees have returned to Aleppo?
Yes.
That's amazing.
And 75 schools were built since December 2016 until November 2017. I don't know right now
really?
How much is it. So I wonder if we have opened like 5 in the United States.
Right. And so what you're saying is that this is not being reported in the United States.
No,
we talked all about Aleppo until after it got liberated, and now nobody talks about
it. We talked about Aleppo as long as our proxy terrorists were occupying Aleppo. Mm-hmm. As soon as they were defeated, we were not interested in knowing what is happening in Aleppo.
Okay, let's watch a little more.
Aleppo was not falling, was being liberated. Maybe in Ghouta is happening the same.
You know, I made this video like 2 weeks before. We saw the exact same corridors in Ghouta. Nobody reported these corridors. We even call a joke. Our government called the humanitarian corridors that were proposed by Russia a joke.
So let me explain. So there were in order to get innocent people, women and children, out of parts of Aleppo, out of parts of Syria, to get them to safer spaces that weren't in conflict, that they wouldn't be killed. And you're saying that the Western governments mocked that idea of having corridors where people could leave. That's what you're saying?
Exactly. Exactly. Because what the United Nations decided was a no-fly zone. And every single time that we were asking, every single time that the Syrian government is winning a war or a battle, whether it's Deir ez-Zor, whether it was in Palmyra, whether it was in Daraya, whether it was in Homs, our United Nations have declared a no-fly zone so they cannot win and be victorious on the war. Now, it's not a conspiracy theory. Just follow the story of what happened. The moment that we impose, and you know how does a no-fly zone happens? By a video reported by the White Helmets of a gas attack, a chemical attack that has happened in the place every single time that the Syrian army is winning the war.
Yes.
But we don't question ourselves these things.
Right.
So this is not about Assad. This is about the people. So that you kind of, and the people kind of understands, and we can put them in perspective with what happened in Duma. The government was not interested in doing anything with Duma. They were basically trying to liberate the other sides because, you know, I mean, Syria's been winning the war for a year now. They destroyed ISIS in September. They defeated and basically threw them completely out of Syria in September 2017. So what happened is that from Duma, that is 4 kilometers away from Damascus, the center, they've been receiving shellings for the past I don't know, like the past 7 years, all the time. So as they were advancing, they started getting shellings much more often. And, you know, close to 1,500 children have died in in Damascus from the shellings of Douma. And so what happened was that on those last weeks in February, they got shellings up to like 30 to 100, and a huge missile fell in one of the main buildings. So the Syrian government decided to say, you know what, we need to finish with Ghouta, because if and liberate them, because if we don't free and we don't liberate it from terrorists, then we won't be able to advance because they keep on going into the capital. So they start throwing the same that happened in Aleppo, because I was there. They throw flyers around saying, we're going to be coming in the next days. Please release the civilians. Let them come out. We are opening these safe corridors. These are the corridors that we're going to be open. Do not shoot at the civilians. And then we can have the battle among you and the Syrian army. And this is for the terrorist groups. So what happened? Our press started going crazy. And in February, we're hearing, in March, we're listening that that Assad and Russia are bombing crazy to Douma, and that Douma is falling again, that we need to do something for the children because he decided to enter Douma. So a few days later, of course, when the Syrian army was able to take half of Douma and cut it and split it in two, you know, they said, we're going to open now the corridors. And there's when the United Nations said, that's it. No, no fly zone. And what they say, I don't know this, but what they say, the people that were there, the journalist friends that I have in Syria, they told me that they used these 2 days in order to exit some of the jihadists from Douma before, you know, they will take the whole place. Not only that, after they were able to take close to 150,000, I don't know if you want to show the other video.
Yeah. Maybe this one here?
Yes.
Let me show it.
Has called for these joke-like humanitarian corridors. Russia needs to just do what...
So that's the U.S. State Department calling those corridors that actually help people, call them jokes?
Yes.
He's calling them a joke. Okay.
United Nations had agreed to and voted on, and that is a countrywide ceasefire.
So now this woman was saying that her children are still there. How come her children are still there?
Because it was very hard to exit.
So this is Douma.
Yeah, this is Douma, and when
they're
like, yes, on March 1st, when they are crossing the border, basically it's very difficult and very few people can make it. They had to run, they had to crawl, so she's saying that my children are still there. And she's also, she kind of doesn't want to be in camera, because if the terrorists would see that you're in camera and they still have your children, because they know you, you know, mm-hmm. they've been there for a long time, they will kill your children. So that's what she's saying. And she's saying, you know, they took my house without my, you know, and she's crying. And but we won't report these, you know. And every time that we show, oh, all these refugees are escaping al-Assad, let's look at the footage. Like, don't believe us right now. Don't believe Jimmy. Don't believe myself, you know. Go and Google the refugees that were crossing and escaping Assad. They're almost, basically, 80% of them are men in their early 20s to 30s, alone, without wives, without children, that they are looking for refugee in Europe. What about these people? Look at them. They're women. They're parents with their children. They're not lying. They have no interest. They're basically finally crossing to a place where they're going to be able to eat. And you can listen to their testimony. A lot of these videos are taken by some of my friends that are just Syrians that I got to know, mm-hmm. That usually just take footage for me. Some of them are from actual journalists that I got to see them in the front lines, because I was actually in the front lines as well. And some are from the Syrian TV, and others are just foreign, Lebanon, etc.
Let's watch a little bit more. So this guy's saying it's awful. They starved us. They killed us with the lack of food. I swear they killed us. May God break them like they broke us. They destroyed us. They destroyed the country. They starved us. They killed our children. Now, he's talking about the CIA-backed moderate rebels. Al-Nusra, Al-Qaeda, ISIS. That's who he's talking about. The people who are from outside the country, who came into the country as terrorists to overthrow Assad at the behest of Saudi Arabia and the CIA. They are using us as protective shields. No one can even think about it. If anyone dared say anything, they would take him and kill him. Meanwhile, we are helpless. If they give us food, we eat. If they don't, we starve. We would beg them to feed us. Okay, I swear my son was 20 days old when he died because of the lack of medicine.
These pictures were taken by my friend. And when people question, you know, why is that Syrians love the Syrian armies? Because look at them. They're one of them. They're just their people. They're their children.
There were militants from al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda there. They kill anyone who spoke against them. They took them and killed them. This war must end. Syria deserves peace. Yes. Do you have any hope for Syria? What do you think? I mean, right now it looks like Assad is winning and people are getting to be able to take back their country a little bit. And right away they do this gas attack. So then the United States starts bombing the crap out of them. So when this is just unbelievable and when we tell the truth about it, you've been there, you've seen it. They're going to call you a conspiracy theorist if you say this is true.
Well, the thing is that I dare anybody to call me a conspiracy theorist mm-hmm. and come along with proofs and fight, you know, the footage I have. And I can back any single thing that I'm saying because I have real footage, number one. Number two, I arrived in Syria for the first time in February 2016. The government of Syria had control only over 35% of the country. The rest of the country was taken by jihadists or armed groups. And Syrians back then told me, don't worry, we will defeat these terrorists and we'll be okay. And I remember I could not believe the amount of positivism. And they have these saying, this is, we're going to race like the phoenix. We are going to rebuild this country again because we've done this for 7,000 years. You know, with these stones that they destroy, we're going to rebuild our homes. And at one point, you know, I would always say, like, how can you be so positive? How can you see yourself? I said, because there's no space. There is no space for extremism in Syria. This is one of the reasons why Syria was always hated by some of the neighboring countries, because what people don't know is that Syria is a secular state.
Secular state in Syria.
And women are protected by constitution. They cannot be forced to be covered nor by religion nor by society. Minorities are protected also much more than any other Syrian. Not only that, but the vice president, and I bet nobody knows this, the vice president of Syria is a woman.
The advisor to
the president is a woman. The president of the parliament in Syria is a woman. The first judge in all of the Middle East as a woman was Syrian. And 30% of the ministries in Syria are led by women. By law, most of the principals of high school are led also by women. Why? Because Syrians understand that half of the country has to be led by women. That's why you can see me when I'm reporting what I'm saying. I am with a T-shirt, whether it is tight clothes or not tight clothes, I am free to be however I can be. You see the reports of these two famous reporters. I don't want to smear them. I don't want to say anything bad, that they are defending the freedom of these amazing, supposedly Syrians from CNN. She was on the ground, completely covered, black. You could only see her eyes.
A CNN reporter was covered up in Syria. And you're saying you were there and you weren't like that.
No.
So why was she doing that?
Because I was in the area where it was already liberated from the terrorists.
Okay.
But she was in the area protected by the terrorists, you know, and asking the world for the freedom of these terrorists, which the freedom of these terrorists means the imposition of fundamentalism and the Sharia law, where women won't have the right to for education or the right to be covered of or uncovered. The most important thing is that people don't know that Assad made up this law in 2006 when he discovered that some girls that were in the borders of the extremist countries were being forced by the parents to stay at home. He made this law that every single Syrian woman shall finish high school by law, otherwise she and the father will go to prison. So This was the best way to protect the women. And this caused a revolution in Saudi Arabia, where women were asking for the same rights. They were asking, why can't we all get an education? Oh, no, haram, haram. Haram is like, it's a curse. How can you say that? Because the value of two virtuous women, which means like two virgin women, equal to a normal man. So do we want this for Syrians when already in the Middle East, it is a hard and complicated position for a woman? Where are all the women in the world? Where are all the liberals in the world? Where are all the gay and lesbian around the world standing for the right of Syrians? Syrians also, they won't judge you or take you to prison if you are gay. Of course, because of the society, it's difficult, but the constitution also protects them. Where are we for not protecting these advancements that this nation has got? I mean, now, are they going to call me an Assadist apologist? No, guess what? I don't care about Assad. I stand by the people. And what the people of Syria right now want, whether we like it or not, it is Assad to stay in power because they would choose him over any other terrorist. Because they don't want this fundamentalism and they want to live in a country that coexists together in peace the way they've done for all these years. Who are we to impose the democracy that we think is perfect, that is not even working for us? And who are we to demand a change of regime because it's going to be okay for our personal interest of the Western policy? And finally, we don't have to agree. We don't have to like al-Assad. We need to respect the people of Syria, and we need to let them take the decision they want to take. In the last election, in 2013, which was an open election and overseen by us, Assad won with 78%. That does hurt us, or 82%, I think, sorry. It probably hurt us. It hurts our interests, the pipelines, the whole Cold War that we still have with Russia. It maybe does. But we've seen it. Is it right or wrong? Only the Syrians have the right to decide this.
And so what people don't understand is if we get rid of Assad, something's going to replace him. We don't have a replacement for Assad, just like we don't have a replacement in Libya. And now Libya is a failed state, and it's a haven for terrorists, and there's open slave markets now. So that's what the CIA in the United States is going to do to Syria. And the people of Syria are saying, no, we don't want that. Assad is actually our leader, and we'll decide who our leader is. And the CIA in the United States, Israel and Saudi Arabia have they have a different idea of who's supposed to run Syria. And that's exactly what's going on. And that's what they don't want us to say. And they don't want you to, I can't believe that you go there. You go to Syria and you're not afraid. You got to be afraid, right?
Jimmy, they're amazing. Oh, you have no idea. I'm going to be there very soon and I'm going to be sharing my live videos. And, you know, my page on Facebook and on Twitter is full of live videos and live stream without cut for people to understand how Syrians are. And I'm sorry I didn't answer your question where you said if I have faith or what I think on Syria. Well, the result was that 35% of the country was under, a government control. Today, 85% of the country is under government control. Within a year, things have turned around, of course, with the help of Russia. But the most important thing is the resilience of the people. They're not giving up. And the most, most important thing is the women of Syria. They are the ones that have taught their children, men and women, to stand for the land of Syria, which, by the way, this is another thing that the world doesn't know. They refer to Syria, to their motherland, as a mother. And they refer to her as a living, breathing being. And they say, I won't let my mother be crucified. And that's the reason why you have such a large amount of girls volunteering to defend that terrorism that later will come after us. Because we can't keep on thinking that we can keep on, you know, sponsoring these terrorists and these wars are going to only stay over there. So I have faith, and I think in very few years, we're going to look back and say, oh my goodness, I can't believe we allow this to happen. But I think that we can be that generation. We can become that generation that turns things around if we wake up. If we all talk at the same time. When was the moment that we thought that it's just the government, the one that has the power for everything? We, the people, have the power. And this is not a movement of revolution. This is a movement of waking up. of waking up to our human side, to waking up to what matters, to waking up to this life that we're holding on to, and what world are we going to leave to our children? Because those children that we are killing can be the assassins of our children. Do we want to keep on sending our children from the United States to fight a war that doesn't convene us?
So we just create more terrorists is what you're saying. Well, Carla Ortiz, I really appreciate your work. You know, you have more courage than me. I've never been to Syria. I would never even entertain going there. And the fact that you do that blows my mind. And I really appreciate you doing that so we can have firsthand knowledge of what's going on. And so thank you so much for doing that. And I don't know where you get your courage from, but it's amazing.
From the Syrians, Jimmy. Mm-hmm. I swear, one thing that I believe is important that you asked me when I arrived here, and I think because the Syria issue is like so big, why wouldn't I think that Assad made this chemical attack? Because he was winning the war.
Yes.
With conventional weapons. And the only thing that would put the whole international community against him was to use chemical weapons in an area that was completely liberated and only had jihadists. And they still had very few, you know, citizens under his power. So I think we need to start asking ourselves questions. I'm not afraid. You are welcome to come on the trip with me. I promise you will fall in love with Syria if it's not in this time, in any other time. But I will be sharing my live videos. And if we don't know who we're killing, we will keep on killing. But if we get to investigate a little bit who are the people that we're killing, we will never allow any more death.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love in here today. Father, Father, don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer.